Well, if the idea of a pile of colorless, watery, boiled cabbage doesn't whet your appetite, I don't think you're alone. But our guest today is here to tell you that not only can cabbage be healthy and delicious when you prepare it correctly, all of the members of the brassica family are wonderful vegetables to add to your diet. Laura Russell is the former associate editor of Food and Wine Cookbooks. She is the Gluten Freedom columnist for The Oregonian and a frequent contributor to Prevention magazine. And she is the author of Brassicas, Cooking the World's Healthiest Vegetables, Kale, Cauliflower, Broccoli, Brussels Sprouts, and more. Laura Russell, welcome to the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you know, I love brassicas, and in my family, family members are just not as excited about Brussels sprouts, for example, as I am.
Unfortunately, a lot of people aren't that excited about Brussels sprouts, but they should be.
Well, I mean, aren't they about as healthy? These are really healthy vegetables we're talking about here.
They are. So this whole group of vegetables, the brassicas, which people may also know as the cabbage family or the mustard family or cruciferous vegetables, they're about as healthy as you can get. They're full of vitamins and minerals, vitamin C, vitamin A. They also include a lot of leafy greens like kale and collards. So you've also got fiber and iron. And so if you're going to choose one group of vegetables to eat, this is definitely a great one.
I totally agree with you. And as I let's talk to my listeners here for a minute, if you love brassica as much as Laura Russell does or I do, maybe you have a favorite variety or a favorite type or a way to prepare them. What's your favorite brassica recipe? You can call or to share it or post it on my Facebook page. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mehler Show. And, the most common types of brassicas, I think, are kind of the ones you highlight in your book, are they not?
Well, what I did, so the big names, the common ones, kale, cauliflower, broccoli, cabbage, and Brussels sprouts, I focused about half the recipes in the book on those because they're so easy to find, they're inexpensive, and I feel like these are the vegetables people would really like to know how to prepare, you know, in a slightly different way. You know, maybe you're sick of boiling broccoli or sauteing kale. So I gave plenty of ideas for those. The other half of the book covers really some of my favorites, other brassicas, arugula and watercress, bok choy, Chinese broccoli, radishes, turnips, collard greens. These are all brassicas as well.
Yeah, great.
So I introduce kind of basics. How do you select them? How do you prepare them? Some interesting recipes, too.
Allie in Waukesha has a comment for us. Allie, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi, thank you. So I really love all vegetables of every type, including multiple different varieties of brassicas. But recently I've been hearing that kale actually makes your hair fall out, and that comes as a surprise because I really like kale, and I thought that it was supposed to be really good for you.
Have you heard that?
I have not heard this, anything about the kale falling out. I've heard a few potential negatives about brassicas, and I always think it's fair to mention those as well. The only thing I've heard regarding that is if you have low thyroid function, that it's better to cook your brassicas than to eat them raw. So, for instance, instead of having a raw kale salad, you would want maybe to, you know, cook it in a white bean chili or something like that. But I have not heard about the hair loss.
No, I haven't either. That's
all right. Thank you.
All right. Maybe somebody else will have some more about that. But I, You know, there's a lot out there on the internet. Some of it's accurate, and that may be accurate, but it may also be in someone's mind.
Well, I can tell you this. I have, over the last 2 years, I've probably eaten about 1,000 pounds of kale, and I do still have all my hair. So that's a positive.
Right. There you go. I love kale. I think it's great. Stephen Eau Claire, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. I was a couple weeks ago at a farmer's market at Festival Foods in Eau Claire, and they had sold out of their supply, but they still had samples, and I sampled pickled Brussels sprouts, and they were delicious. I wonder if there's anyone out there who has a recipe so I can try it myself, unless I can find this vendor again.
Right. That sounds delicious. And were they halved, or was it like the Brussels sprout leaves?
They were small Brussels sprouts whole.
Cool. Okay.
They may have been halved in some cases. I'm not exactly sure. That could be, but they were, you know, a significant size of Brussels sprouts. And I'm not sure whether it was a sweet or dill brine. I don't remember. I just remember when I tasted them, you could really taste the Brussels sprout, and it was delicious.
Mm-hmm. And were they spicy?
Not very hot, no. So, you know, maybe they're out there and they could give us at least some hints without the actual recipe. Or maybe,
well,
I can find them again. But when I heard you were on, I've always liked Brussels sprouts. My mother used to boil them. I sauteed them with butter and sometimes roast them with olive oil in the oven.
But, I love the roasted. Yes, the roasted Brussels sprouts are amazing. You just, you know, get that oven really hot and you can get them nice and browned. And even sort of crisp around the edges. That's one of my favorite ways to eat Brussels sprouts.
And there, you have a recipe, which actually I think we're going to post, charred Brussels sprouts with pancetta and fig glaze.
Yes, that's one of my favorites.
Oh, my goodness. I took a look at that. And you, in your book as well, something I really like is the fact that you have some wonderful photography. And so just looking at that photo of those charred Brussels sprouts and pancetta with fig glaze, I wanted to eat the page.
Oh, you're good. Well, you definitely need to try that one. And I think that recipe is a really good example of, you know, trying to highlight and work with the natural flavor of these vegetables instead of, you know, trying to mask it or cover it up. And by adding that pancetta, which is a little bit salty, and then I make a fig glaze just with a tablespoon or so of fig jam and some water. And so, you know, you saute these Brussels sprouts, and the final dish is a little bit sweet, it's a little bit savory, it's a little salty, you have a mild bitterness from the Brussels sprouts, but together it just makes this amazing, you know, amazing vegetable dish.
Well, and Judith today surprised me, and I was, what a pleasant surprise. She prepared, from your book, she prepared the grilled baby bok choy with miso butter, for one thing, and also the lemony broccoli chop.
Oh, that's one of my favorites, too.
Oh, my word. She shared that with me today before the show, so I had a chance to, for research purposes, of course, sample, and it was wonderful.
Well, you had a very healthy breakfast, didn't you?
Whoa, I'm telling you, it is really, really, really good. So the grilled baby bok choy with miso butter is going to also be up on our page, along with roasted broccoli and with whitey mushrooms. And I have to go back to the pickled Brussels sprouts, because I'm thinking back, probably less than a year ago, we were at a place, some friends, for Sunday brunch, and we had a Bloody Mary, which I'm sure you're probably familiar with. You may be.
I certainly am.
And one of the, and you know, they're always, you know, you find a lot of different things in a Bloody Mary. And one of the things in that Bloody Mary was a pickled Brussels sprout. And it was delicious.
Mm.
That was really good.
That would be great, dipped in that Bloody Mary.
Oh, man, it was good. I actually said, can I have some more of those of those pickled Brussels sprouts? And he said, oh, sure. He gave me a little plate, a plateful of them, and I gobbled them right up.
Well, I'm gonna need to experiment with that. I haven't pickled Brussels sprouts before, but you know, so many brassicas really are delicious, pickled or fermented. I mean, even sauerkraut, kimchi, things like that. And I bet the Brussels sprouts would be fantastic.
Yeah, believe me, they are. You know, the Brussels sprouts, when you're preparing or purchasing them, are there some things that you need to look for? I mean, I've gotten Brussels sprouts. I thought, oh darn, you know they just didn't cook well, and I thought they were too old or had been out too long or what.
Right. Well, so I like to choose, if I have the option, I like to choose smaller Brussels sprouts than the big huge ones.
Right.
They tend to be a little bit sweeter. You want to look out to make sure none of those outer leaves are yellowing at all. Usually if they're to the point where they're yellowing, they might be a little bit past their prime. And the other thing too, when you're cooking them, I think you're always going to have more success unless they're teeny, teeny, tiny. You're always going to have more success by either cutting them in half or shredding them, because what happens if you cook Brussels sprouts whole and they're too big, the outside is really going to be overcooked by the time, you know, the inside is cooked at all.
Yeah.
So that's where you get those strong flavors, when you have to overcook it. So I think the smaller the better when it comes to the sprouts.
I like to grill them too. I'll cut them in half and grill them.
Yes. So anything where you can get, I'm sure they get nice and brown on
yes.
the grill. And that's another thing. With Brussels sprouts, I really avoid the water-soluble method. So I really don't love them boiled or even steamed. I think
right.
something where you can brown them, sautéing, roasting, like you said, grilling, something where you can get that caramelization.
Yeah,
really
they really get sweeter. They get much sweeter. We'll take a quick break here, Laura, to take a look at the news, and then we'll be back. Stay with us. Are you crazy for kale or bewitched by Brussels sprouts? If you love brassicas, or especially if you think you don't, but might like to try them, this is really the show for you. Larry Mueller here. Glad you could join us today on the Ideas Network. My guest, Laura Russell, is the former associate editor of Food and Wine Cookbooks. She's the Gluten Freedom columnist for The Oregonian and a frequent contributor to Prevention magazine, and is the author of the book we're talking about today. It's called Brassicas, Cooking the World's Healthiest Vegetables, Kale, Cauliflower, Broccoli, Brussels Sprouts, and a whole lot more. And Laura, thanks again for spending time with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And I want to invite as our listeners, as you listen in, I hope you'll join us. Do you love brassicas? Do you have a favorite variety or way to prepare them? Story connected with them? What's your favorite brassica recipe? You call and share it or post it on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to have you do that. Phone number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Certainly love to hear from you. Brassicas can certainly have a strong flavor, but you say that's in large part because of how we have traditionally cooked them. What are the kind of the worst ways to cook brassicas?
Well, I think I agree with you. I think part of the reason people don't like them is just that maybe they're not preparing them in the best way. And what I always say is, unless you've had something that's been well prepared, you don't know how it's supposed to taste. So if you grew up eating, you know, really watery piles of broccoli or kind of mushy cauliflower, of course you're not going to like it, right? because
yep.
that's all you know. So to me, personally, I think the worst way to cook these vegetables is boiling. The reason for that, well, there's a few reasons for that. For one, it overcooks them more quickly than other cooking methods. And when you're boiling these vegetables and you overcook them, that's where you get that telltale sulfur smell. The other reason, of course, is then once you're ready to eat the vegetables, they're usually really, really watery. So any of the positive flavors you might have had are now diluted by water anyway. So boiling isn't number one on my list, for sure.
No, for sure. Well, you know, there are some characteristics about brassicas that flavor profiles that, you know, that we can use to really highlight their unique taste. And you talk about that in your book. By the way, you're a good writer, too. You're an engaging writer.
Oh, thank you.
And I like reading your stories, the stories you have about each of the recipes connected with each of them. But also in the beginning, you talk, I think, early on, you talk about flavor profiles, like things like balance and bold on bold heat and that sort of thing.
Right. Part of the reason I do this, I don't like to just give people recipes. I like to sort of lay down the foundation so you know why things are working. So, you know, you can go beyond cooking the broccoli, you know, and chickpea recipe that you had this morning and know how to create things on your own with what you have in your kitchen. So one of the things I talk about is balance. A lot of people think several of these vegetables taste strong or bitter. And some of them do, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're unpleasant. So I like to talk about balancing the flavors. If you have something that's sharp or intense on its own, you just need to balance it. For instance, you could add something starchy, beans, potatoes, polenta. You could add a dairy product. So then the creaminess of butter or yogurt or cheese will smooth out those aggressive flavors. You could add something sweet, like, and I don't mean sugar, but you could add caramelized onions or coconut or tomatoes or a little balsamic vinegar. And all of these are examples of just other things you can add to a recipe to make the flavors complete.
Very good points. Andy in Milwaukee has something that he would like to share. Hi, Andy. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I was just listening to your program, and I was thinking of this wonderful salad that we sort of got as a present when my daughter was born. One of my wife's friends brought over this kale salad, and we've never had kale salad before. And it's just, you know, kale with the ribs removed, shredded into, you know, smaller portions, and then with feta and dried cranberries and toasted pine nuts. And what our friend told us was kind of the key is the dressing she used was just, you know, a very plain vinaigrette with olive oil and some kind of white wine vinegar, but she added a little teaspoon of sugar to it, and then she let the dressing kind of sit on the kale and sort of soften it up a little bit to make it a little less rough, and it's delicious, and we make it all the time now.
Oh, it sounds...
That's wonderful. And first of all, I'm so excited to hear that your friends bring you food after you have a baby, because that's the greatest gift after you've had a baby. But the recipe you just gave perfectly shows what I was just talking about. You know, kale could be a little bit aggressive, but your friend added dried cranberries, which added some sweetness, and feta cheese. And so the creaminess of that cheese kind of smoothed everything out. So I bet that salad was amazing.
It sounds wonderful.
Yeah, we make it all the time. The only thing is just that the price of the pine nuts sometimes pinches you a little bit, but otherwise, you know, it's a great salad.
The pine nuts. Well, you know, you could also just do some toasted slivered almonds instead. It'll be just as good, I promise.
Yeah, that's not a tip. Yeah, that's not a bad idea. It's a lot cheaper too.
Yeah, those pine nuts are expensive.
Caleb in Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hey, Larry, thanks for taking my call. You know, I originally called just to tell you what my favorite brassicas are, but as your guest was talking about ways to prepare it and mellow out the flavor, it made me think of probably my favorite way to eat Brussels sprouts. And we have them, we grill them so they're nice and brown, and then we bake it in with a almost like a mac and cheese bake, and put breadcrumbs on top. You get the creaminess and the starchiness of the cheese and the noodles, and you get that wonderful flavor of the Brussels sprouts in there. And so that's probably my favorite way to eat that. But as a kid, I remember singing the I Love Broccoli song. I don't know if any of you guys have heard that one. But,
I haven't.
It's okay, it's just a great little song. I'm not going to sing it for you, but it talks about how I love broccoli. It's such a tasty treat. And I sing that with my little kid.
Oh, you should sing it for us.
His favorite thing, when we go shopping, Mama, she takes care of all the actual shopping, and he and I peruse the produce aisle. And he'll name each and everything, and we always end at the broccoli because, of course, there's always little bits of broken broccoli sitting on the display case there. And we'll always pick up those little bits, and he's just so excited to eat broccoli.
Oh,
and
that's
probably his favorite veggie. Mine, in addition to broccoli, is Brussels sprouts and broccoli Romanesco. It's funny. I love the Romanesco, but I can't stand cauliflower.
That's interesting. That's interesting. Well, the Romanesco, though, first of all, is spectacular. I mean, it's so gorgeous, just the way it looks.
And you're going to have to explain that. I'm sure there are people saying, Romanesco, what the heck's that?
So Romanesco, it's kind of a cross between cauliflower and broccoli. It can be this spectacular lime green color. And the florets are made, they're in these sort of spiral, I guess the right word would be fractal, but it's just a beautiful, beautiful vegetable. And you can treat it, you know, really sort of either like broccoli or cauliflower. I think it's a little closer to cauliflower. So I think if you like Romanesco, there's still a lot of hope that you will love cauliflower.
For me, sure. Sure. Well, I guess I like cauliflower in my jardinière, the pickled
spices
there.
Yeah.
Thanks, Caleb.
Yep.
I appreciate the call. All right. Well, we had a Facebook comment from Daniel who says, grow them all. I grow them all, grill them all, and I love them all.
Oh, good.
Thank you for that. Lance in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. So I just I'm in the process of buying some beautiful-looking green kale. And I was thinking of just washing it off and serving it in a raw salad. Is that a good idea? I don't know how to prepare it.
Yes. So kale salads are amazing. The one thing I would recommend, you know, that thick center rib, I would remove that if you're going to eat it raw. And then what I do is sort of stack the leaves. And, you know, you don't need to be too picky about that. Just kind of get them in a pile. And then I roll them up like in a cigar shape. And then just very thinly cut crosswise. And so before you know it, the whole bunch of kale, you know, is very thinly sliced.
I see.
Yeah, so I just think, especially if you haven't eaten it raw before, just making sure that it's very thin. Otherwise, it can be chewy.
Mm-hmm.
But like the caller a moment ago said about the kale salad, you can toss it with a dressing and maybe even let it sit for an hour or so. And the dressing, you know, if you have lemon juice in there, that really softens the kale a little bit.
Kind of marinated a little bit.
Exactly. So unlike a normal, you know, soft lettuce salad, you almost have to add the dressing at the last second. It's a good idea to add dressing to a kale salad an hour, you know, even 2 hours ahead. And then it marinates it, it softens that kale a little bit, and really, really helps with the flavor, too.
Yeah.
So normally people really steam it before they eat it?
No.
You mean just if you were doing something other than a salad?
Yeah, right.
Right. You could do all sorts of things. I like to saute it just in a pan
Just
with olive oil and garlic is great. You can cut it into, you know, I don't really want to say wedges, I guess sort of thick strips, and you can make kale chips in the oven.
I heard about that.
Yeah, just a really low oven, like 300 degrees, and it kind of dries them out. My kids go crazy for those. I think anything called chip makes them happy.
Okay, great.
Lots of good tips there. Lance, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Oh, boy. Jeremy in Dubuque, Iowa, up next. Jeremy, hello.
Hi. How's it going?
Great. Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
So I actually work at Farm Tech out in Dyersville, and we've been struggling. We grow kale aquaponically because it grows really, really well. But it being kind of more of a meat and potatoes kind of place, we really struggle selling it because people don't really know what it is. So what kind of tips would you give to get people more involved in eating it and things like that?
Gosh, that's an interesting question because, these kale salads are getting, you know, they're really spreading across the country,
yeah.
You know, on restaurant menus. You're starting to see them a lot. But for people who have never had kale, I'm not sure if that's where I'd start. I think that it's one thing I love to do with kale. It's great in soups. So a really hearty, like sausage and white bean soup with kale simmered in there, that's a great place to start eating kale, I think, is with the soups. Now, are you curious more how to get people to buy it in the first place?
Yeah, how to kind of get them to want to buy it, you know?
Right. That's an interesting question. I almost think a lot of times these vegetables are really, people are really finding out about them through restaurants. So I almost wonder if it would be even worth talking to some local restaurants and maybe partnering and saying, hey, would you guys like to develop a kale salad for your menu? Or, you know, it's great in these fall soups. And maybe getting it so people locally will have an opportunity to taste it and realize they like it before they've had to make it themselves. Another way is maybe if you could just get some kale recipes and have some recipe cards and maybe offer those as well. I think if you could give people an idea about what they could cook with kale. The kale chips, that's a good way to start. Like I said, even my kids, that was kind of my gateway kale recipe to get them to, you know, to start eating their greens.
You know, do you sell at farmers markets by any chance?
No, not right now. We don't.
Oh, I just wondered because, like, I could see an opportunity where you would make some soup in
right.
some sort of setting and then have the recipe for it and then just offer it up for small samples for people to taste. Much as you see in grocery stores, a lot of times there'll be someone preparing a pizza or whatever in the store for you to try. And I think giving people the recipes when they buy is really kind of a key.
Right, just so they have an idea of where to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, that's a good idea.
So give it a shot, and good luck, Jeremy. You're doing good work there, trying to get people to eat kale, and they should.
Oh, I agree.
1-800-642-1234, the number to call for you to join in. Christine in Manitowoc says, I just tuned in and had to tell you that I just canned a batch of spicy garlic Brussels sprouts grown in my garden for our Bloody Marys.
Oh, love it.
Last night I started a batch of sauerkraut as well, and I also canned collard greens a few weeks ago.
Amazing.
And, you know, this is kind of, I mean, this is for brassicas here in Wisconsin. I mean, this is when they're due. I mean, they're being harvested in the garden right now, so you're seeing them at farmers markets, you know, fresh at farmers markets. So your book, the timing on this is pretty good.
Oh, right now is probably just the prime time at the farmers markets that the fall, you know, the fall brassicas are starting to appear. And I have another comment. I am impressed with everyone's love of Bloody Marys in your state. I'm going to need to visit soon.
You when you come to visit, you call first, Laura. Take you to a place where you will have a good Bloody Mary and a great brunch.
And it will be healthy because, you know, horseradish is also a brassica, and that's probably in all of these Bloody Marys.
Oh, yeah. And some places you can go where Bloody Marys, you will find up to 8-9 different veggies of one sort or another in the glass along with your Bloody Mary.
See, it's breakfast of champions.
that's exactly right. Oh, man. We have Robert at Cross Plains next. Hi, Robert. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for answering the question. I wonder if there's a genetic basis to the bitterness that people taste with Brussels sprouts. They've always tasted incredibly sweet to my wife, incredibly bitter to me. She's taught me to eat them mainly by roasting them, which really helps. But I think back, probably every kid in ninth grade in biology class does this experiment where you put a drop of this benign chemical on your tongue, and half of people roughly can taste it, and it tastes awful, and the other half it tastes like distilled water. They taste nothing at all, and it's a genetically based thing. And I'm wondering if that has something to do with why people taste them as bitter or not. Could it be a genetic basis for that?
Well, it certainly could be. And I'll tell you what I know without, you know, going too much into chemistry, which is not my strong point. My strong point is cooking. But the reason that these vegetables are so healthy is because a lot of them are very, very heavy in these sulfur compounds. So when you overcook them, or if, you know, you come home and cabbage is boiling and you smell sulfur, that's exactly what's in there that is potentially making it bitter. And it is true, or at least I have read a lot about it, that there's a group of people known as super tasters who are highly, highly sensitive to, not all, but the brassicas that are especially high in sulfur compounds, and that they do get a bitterness that, you know, that not everyone gets, that not everyone can detect. So it certainly, I mean, you already knew this, but it certainly is a real thing.
Oh, so there you go, Robert. Thank you for calling. Oh, man. So we have Nick. Maybe we've got time for Nick here. Nick, hi. Thanks for calling from Milwaukee.
Hi, how's it going?
Great. What's on your mind?
Well, I know we're getting to the end here. I just thought I would give you a very quick recipe, and it's a quick recipe because it's what I like to call a cop-out recipe. And we all need those because life is busy, right?
Mm-hmm. So what have you got?
Well, my family, I'm first generation. My family is from southern Italy, and nobody has to tell southern Italians to eat their greens or their brassicas. We love them.
Yep.
It has nothing to do with all this red sauce and garlic bread. Forget about all that.
But you're running out of time, so you got to give it to us.
Okay. Pasta and broccoli. Pasta e broccoli. All you do, it sounds bland. I assure you it's not. Try it. You'll like it. All you do is you cut up your head of broccoli in a pot with just enough water to cover it, your salt, your pepper, a garlic, plenty of garlic. You cook that until the broccoli is falling apart. And then you'd put whatever kind of pasta you want in that pot to cook until it's al dente. And all you do is dress that with olive oil, some nice hot pepper flakes, and some Parmesan cheese, and that's dinner.
There you
sounds
go.
Delicious.
It sounds delicious. In fact, I like that a lot. As I like a lot of I haven't tried all your recipes in your book, but you have a wonderful book here, Laura. And if you come to Wisconsin, we'll have a Bloody Mary and probably eat some brassicas.
Wonderful. That sounds like a plan.
You're right. Laura Russell is the author of Brassicas, Cooking the World's Healthiest Vegetables. A great book. I know you're going to enjoy reading it. It was fun to talk with her. I hope we have a chance to visit with her again because she's got a wonderful book there. Tomorrow, Inga Wischer joins us from Wisconsin Public Television from around the farm table to talk about fall on the farm. And then 11:45, we'll take a look at microbes in cow stomachs, no less. Stay with us. Lots in store.